This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. I'm Roshan Kanasin, and welcome to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Today, we're going to explore how GenAI will change politics with Brian DeAngelis. He's the partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group. Drawing from their recent article titled AI, the Next Political Game Changer, we'll explore how artificial intelligence is poised to reshape political campaigns and society at large, from the power of AI in micro-targeting and personalized messaging to its implications for transparency and polarization. We'll dissect the four key ways that Penta sees AI transforming political landscapes, discuss the potential benefits and, of course, drawbacks of its integration into campaigns and elections. Brian, thank you for joining me on the line here. I understand it is quite late on your side, so thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here.
So, as I mentioned, there are four key ways that Penta is watching how AI could change the landscape for political campaigns. Those four key ways are the speed and efficiency gains for campaigns, the easier presidential branding, bots on the ground for grassroots canvassing, and the risk of malicious use of AI. That's also a key consideration. And we're going to dive into them, I think, as the conversation goes on. Now, with the increasing use of AI in politics, maybe let's start with some of the potential positive impacts you foresee for both political campaigns and society as a whole before we get into the negative, more existential things.
Sure, that sounds great. One of the most positive things that I'm looking at is really the efficiency and speed that AI can deliver information and candidly free up time. For those of us who have worked on political campaigns, you're always racing against the clock. Time is a precious resource. And so the ability to use AI in a way that maximizes the candidate time. And the example we use in the piece is, you know, thinking about even cutting a new ad. It requires bringing a candidate into a studio, working through several different scripts. You might cut an ad that, you know, you want to personalize to voters in one part of the country and then voters in another part of the country. Having the AI tools to be able to take your candidate's message and then do all that without their time, freeing them up to do additional things, just creates a level of, again, speed and efficiency that I think will be greatly appreciated by all those campaign staffers out there.
Yeah, because before this, it was a lot of legwork, right? You'd have to record. Yeah. So let's say for the U.S., for example, and let's just say we're just talking about states, not even counties in terms of targeting them. That's 50 different ads for the 51 different states. That's a lot of legwork and recording and edit that needs to be done.
That's right. That's right. And again, it's a lot of the candidates' time for them to be able to sit there in a studio, cut those ads, you know, think about the way they want to personalize their message for every one of that. It's stuff that they've said over and over and over again, but you actually have to physically get them in there, record that, and then, you know, produce it and push it out there into the different media outlets. So having the ability to kind of get that core recording, if you will, from your candidate, and then we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, very transparently use AI to then, you know, customize it for different regions, respond to news as it happens, put those ads out in the world, will allow campaigns to just be much more nimble and flexible than they can be now.
Now, conversely, talk to us a bit about some of the concerns or potential negative consequences of the rise of AI and integrating it into political campaigns and the election process. Because as good as those speed gains sound, Brian, I can totally see how that can be misused, right?
Yes, and we're already seeing it. Unfortunately, we've seen instances here in the United States where political actors have used AI to impersonate phone calls from President Biden to New Hampshire voters, telling them he didn't need them to come out to vote.
Wow.
We've seen people use, you know, doctored videos. So there is a huge risk here, and also a big challenge, I think, for both policymakers and the developers behind a lot of these tools to put the right guardrails in place, have the right policies that we expect political candidates, their campaigns, their supporters to abide by. But we have a big problem, I think, not only in the United States, but really in parts all over the world, of misinformation and disinformation and how quickly that can spread. And AI can certainly be used in those, you know, negative ways and can certainly bring the same level of speed and efficiency to what we don't want to see happen. So there's a lot of risk and a lot of, I think, governance that needs to be in place. But, you know, we want to kind of get through this exciting technology of both how do we manage those negative risks, but still open up those opportunities for the positive benefits it may have for the innovations we can see growing out of this.
Now, one of the innovations, and tying back to some of the positive points you were talking about earlier, is the ability to use micro-targeting and personalized messaging. I think we were talking a little bit about that. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit more about how you believe this will reshape the dynamics of political communication and voter engagement. I think we're seeing a lot of, you know, in the world of influencers and fandom, you're seeing a lot of these parasocial relationships where the fans kind of feel like they're talking to the influencer, but really it's a one-way street in that sense, right?
So, right.
Are we seeing something similar with potentially here as well?
Possibly. I also think it provides a really great opportunity to connect more directly with a campaign and again, start to personalize a little bit of the message. I mean, if you think of a lot of campaigns, they are powered by volunteers, usually unpaid staff, folks who are big supporters of the candidates, whether that's a presidential election or more local election. And there's still a lot of work that's done knocking on doors, talking to friends and family, showing up at different events and acting as a surrogate. And, you know, human knowledge only goes so far. It's impossible to know every single position that a candidate has or be able to answer every question. And I started my career in this way, you know, as a field staffer in New Hampshire and as a district representative for my local congressman right out of college. And you did your best to cover the positions and the policies of the candidate, but you also had a lot of, I'll get back to you on that, or can I give you some additional information? We've started to see candidates experiment with apps and bots where, you know, you can tap into a generative AI platform and ask the question, ask the, you know, position on not maybe a major policy, but a more, you know, policy that's not getting as much attention, but that this particular voter might care about. And now you have the answer right at your fingertips and you can engage that voter in a different way, give them the information they need, which I think can be a potential game changer. I mean, we are seeing a very politicized electorate. We are seeing what social media has done in terms of really polarizing our politics. And a lot of folks, we're seeing it here in the United States for sure. Opinions are well entrenched already for President Biden and former President Trump. But there still are those what we call swing voters or independent voters that really won't tune in until September, October, and they'll be the ones that could sway a state one way or the other. And being able to, again, customize your approach to them, have the information right at your fingertips to engage them, could be the difference of swinging those voters towards your candidate.
Folks, I've been speaking with Brian DeAngelis, partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group, and we've been talking about the four ways that Gen AI will change politics and political campaigns. This is Enterprise Explores. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Begin free Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Gunderson, and today we're exploring how GenAI will change politics with Brian DeAngelis. He's the partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group. There are four key ways that Penta is watching in terms of how GenAI could change politics. That is the speed and efficiency gains that can come from all this, the easier presidential branding, bots on the ground for grassroots canvassing, and the risk of malicious use of AI, which is still a key concern. So these are four things that they're watching. We talked a little bit earlier about the power of micro-targeting and personalized messaging. But right now, I want to move the conversation over to transparency and accountability. Right, this is going to be a key thing that a lot of people are going to be concerned about. It's a crucial area in politics and in society at large. How do you envision AI impacting transparency in political campaigns, right? Especially regarding the use of data and algorithms, all the benefits you talked about earlier, you know, being able to hear about policy directly from an AI chatbot of a particular presidential candidate or any candidate for that matter is very powerful. But transparency and accountability is going to be as important, I believe.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's two main issues I see that'll need to be addressed. One is what you're doing with the data that you receive from those potential voters, especially as we move into an environment where, whether it's through a chatbot or other means, you're getting much more personalized with what the voter is interested in. How are you using that information? How are you potentially sharing that information or reselling that information? I'm sure all of us and a lot of the listeners are used to this, but you sign up for one candidate's email and all of a sudden you've got 30 candidates emailing, right? There's a lot of data sharing, and I think you're going to have to be very careful and have some clear policies around how you do that with AI as things get more and more personalized. I think the other big one is then the use of AI. And as candidates are relying on the technology, and we're starting to see a number of advertising platforms and companies come out with their policies, being transparent about how it's being used, disclosing when an advertisement or another means of communication has relied on maybe generative AI, has been edited with AI, being very upfront about that. Not trying to hide it, not trying to seem like you're manipulating or misinforming. And part of that will be both on the candidates themselves, the platforms, to make sure they have the policies in place where they're setting those expectations. And I would say even the media, that they're continuing to ask these questions, and when these tools are being misused, you know, exposing that and being strong fact checkers as an independent source.
Aside from being transparent about the use of AI or how the data is being used, Brian, do you have any suggestions or any thoughts on how to balance between the use of AI with the safeguarding of voter data? Do you have any particular suggestions for how to do that, aside from, you know, disclosing that this is how it's going to be done?
Yeah, I think it needs to be disclosed, not only how it's going to be used, but then what you're going to do with that data afterwards, right? And so, you know, people should feel like they are in a safe place to engage with that content, that, again, both the platforms and the candidates that are using these different platforms for advertising are being very clear about what's AI, when they're using it, why maybe you're being targeted with that particular ad. We see this a lot on social media, but right, Brian, you have an interest in the NFL and football, so we're serving you this ad for this reason, right? Having that sort of front-footed, proactive communication, I think, will be key as we go deeper and deeper into how this technology can shape not only our politics, but even our societies.
Now, So I guess it, right now it's really just about awareness, right? And being very clear about how you're using all of this, which is right now kind of buried in terms and conditions that you everyone just clicks yes to and doesn't really know what happens with on the back end. Now, with any rise in a new technology, and we saw this with social media and the personalized targeted advertising you could do then, we're going to be able to get more personalized and more targeted with Gen AI now. At least it can be done in the background. So your article, or the article from Penta, you and your co-authors touch on the potential for AI to exacerbate political polarization. I think that's a key concern. It's not just a key concern in the US. We're seeing it across the world. Polarization is a key consideration. So could you maybe expand on this and some strategies that can be employed to manage or mitigate the polarization in AI-driven political campaigns?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and it is, personally, I would say, one of the bigger concerns. I mean, we are seeing more polarization, and you can point to a number of factors on that. But I think most people would agree that the way technology has reshaped our media and social media, it's much easier for folks to surround themselves with content that reaffirms their position.
The or echo
their
chamber, correct?
Initial belief, right. And you can get stuck, which may not be the right word, but in that echo chamber. And we've lost the some of the ability to have an open discussion, to civilly debate both sides, to see the and or. You know, the points that one side makes, and you might not agree with all of them, but you see the value in it and you understand it. AI, if not used correctly, if not set up the right way in politics, could lead to just further exacerbation of that problem instead of bringing people together, showing how both sides view the issue. You know, just reinforcing kind of the key points that people are looking for. I would like to think, but I it might be a little naive, that AI could be used in a way to prevent a very non-political, factual debate on the merits of what one side says in an argument, the merits on the other side, and give people that more encyclopedic, if you will, interpretation of a law or a policy or whatever may be moving forward. But I suspect, like social media, there's a higher risk that it just adds to that echo chamber and further pulls us apart in that way.
Yeah, that seems to be the low-hanging fruit, right? Just figure out what works and kind of continue to strengthen your, add to the conversation around why your side is better than the other, or attack campaigns. Because it works, right? The algorithm continues to feed into those echo chambers. Do you have any strategies in terms of how we can manage that a little better? Is there anything that you guys are working on or have in mind?
I mean, a lot of what I'm seeing, and I think is a bit of a lesson learned from, you know, the rise of social media and even the internet boom of now a couple decades ago, is policymakers really understanding that the business community is the innovators behind a lot of this technology, working together with them to get in front of this. And I'm actually encouraged around AI in this respect. We've seen the EU already move forward. The US has not formally moved forward, but we've seen Senate Majority Leader Schumer, several others from both sides of our political aisles in the White House, kind of jump on this very early on and understand that we need to be educated on this. We need to become experts. We need to work with the folks leading this charge. And we've seen some high profile CEOs and developers come in and out of Washington to educate policymakers. I think we need to lean into that approach of, we're all in this together. We need to get the right guardrails up and running so we can pull out of this technology more of those net benefits and manage some of the inevitable risks that we will see people try to, you know, exploit for their advantage, especially during high profile political campaigns and other moments.
On that note, actually, with AI's ability to generate quote unquote deep fakes and manipulate media content, especially when we see how Sora has really kind of captured people's imaginations, and who knows how that will impact the political landscape when it does come to market. How do you, it's here, right? The technology is here. It's going to be impacting the way information is and disinformation is spread. Robocalls impersonating Biden are already here, and we're going to see that probably not just in the US, but across the world, right? How do you suggest addressing, or how do you suggest, I guess, policymakers, right, on one end, but also the campaigners themselves manage this, right? Because they're going to have to deal with a lot of this flack, right? Someone's going to put up a fake post about their candidate. How should they be watching this and managing it? And what can, I guess, voters be more aware of?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that last bit, because I thought you were heading in this direction, but I do think everyone involved in these discussions has a role to play. And the key word probably is vigilance, right? As a voter, you know, really making sure you understand the media you're consuming. You know, I teach my children, are not quite old enough to vote, but they're getting into that age where they pay attention to the news. And I'm trying to teach them not so much question everything, but understand the source, understand why you might be seeing this particular point of view presented by this candidate or this company, and understand both sides of it. I think politicians need to do the same. Of we've talked about them being transparent on their own, you know, use of AI, but also vigilant about what may be used against them and classic crisis communications, but having that early warning system and that rapid response process in place, so before something really starts to go viral or the misinformation travel, you're on top of it. You're out there setting the record straight. And the kind of third leg of this stool is the media. And I do think, yes, our media is getting more polarized. It unfortunately is losing its prestige and the confidence that some voters have in it, I think, because of their own polarization, but being that independent fact checker, calling things out when they're not being used correctly, or they're stretching the truth or spreading misinformation, being that referee, if you will, in the political fight that, you know, tries to keep things honest and tries to keep the electorate well informed.
Folks, I've been speaking with Brian DeAngelis, partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group, and we've been talking about the four ways that Gen AI will change politics and political campaigns. This is Enterprise Explores. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bluff-free medium, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. I'm Roshan Gunderson, and today we're exploring how Gen AI will change politics with Brian DeAngelis. He's the partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group. Brian, as we come to the close in this conversation, we've talked about indirectly, and we've kind of addressed the four ways that Penta is watching how Gen AI will impact politics, right? So we've got the speed and efficiency gains for campaigns that we talked about earlier, the ability to custom to process information, make new ads, those kind of things, the easier presidential branding, which kind of ties in with the speed and efficiency gains, but also the bots on the ground, grassroots canvassing, right? Creating those bots of candidates that can answer questions.
Honestly, we didn't even get to some of the more exciting parts of that, where you're seeing, I think it was in London, but you might need to fact check on me, they had a concert with Elvis, right? So when are we going to see candidates in multiple locations at one time, right? When are we going to see moments like that powered by AI. And so there's a lot of exciting things coming out of this. And I think the key part to take here is early on, we may, like we see with a lot of technology, see the worst case uses of it or the more detrimental uses of it, because that tends to be sort of where folks go at first. And we may see some anxiety over how it's used, but I do also think there's a lot of benefits that could come out of this and a lot of exciting innovations we'll see.
Yeah, I was going to ask, with those four ways that we mentioned that you guys are watching out for, is there anything that we haven't touched on or talked about that you'd like to bring up before we wrap up?
I think we touched a little bit on the branding, but it'll be very interesting to see both transparently and hopefully not, but maybe not as transparently, how candidates use it to really reshape their image. I mean, we've seen examples of this. I believe it was in Indonesia where a former military leader was trying to have a softer image and was running advertising powered by AI that made him a little more warm and friendly and cuddly. You know, we haven't seen it in the United States, nor do I think the media would allow the candidates to get away with it. But some of the biggest questions in this election are not about policy, but they're about the candidate's age. They're about the candidate's ability to do the job. They're about the candidate's past, you know, potentially criminal records and the issues. So will we start to see candidates try to rebrand themselves using the power of AI and other technology, you know, innovations, social media tools, and how do we keep a watchful eye on when that's appropriate and when that might be overstepping?
I guess the interesting part from that is that's not necessarily new, right? Rebranding yourself, but the speed at which you can do it today and the targeting that you can do to kind of, you know, based on the data and the algorithms, maybe you're targeting people who might be more susceptible to that messaging, or you're targeting people who are on the fence. That's where a lot of these productivity gains can be really amplified, I guess.
That's right. That's right. The targeting you're able to do now across the board, where even seeing candidates who might be reading, or I'm sorry, voters who might be engaging with online content about the age concerns or the health concerns, and then targeting ads to them powered by AI that's showing, you know, a more vibrant, younger candidate. I mean, you can start to get into some really gray areas that I think we need to keep a very close eye on.
Brian, looking beyond the immediate future and this year's year of elections, really, what long-term societal impacts do you anticipate? Are you watching out for as AI continues to grow and shape the political landscape, especially considering that we're still very early in the Gen AI game?
We are very early, and we're going to see it used in some very, very high profile, globally watched elections, not only in the United States, but in the European Union and in parts of Asia and all across really the globe. And I believe this has been true for, you know, decades, if not longer, but political environment can tend to be the experimental ground and the, you know, initial use cases that then we see adopted in the business community, in other parts of our economy and our society as a whole. So watching kind of how things play out this year and then how some of those lessons could then be used by corporations that are trying to push a message out or reach certain stakeholders, be that investors, employees, customers, shape their image. All of these are kind of big questions that are percolating in our head, both as advisors to many of these clients, but even folks who are just, we use a lot of AI ourselves and a lot of our tools are AI powered. So we're very interested in kind of the evolution of this and the best use cases that we can bring to some of our client work, our business work, and the economy at large.
And just to reemphasize the point, in the final question for today, Brian, how can voters navigate this evolving landscape and better protect themselves from potential misuses of AI, generative AI in politics going forward?
I think it ultimately comes down to, you know, really diversifying the content you're consuming about candidates. You know, there's value in hearing directly from candidates and their websites, but there's an equal value to their portrayal in the media, how, you know, some other trusted sources, be it television, print, or even some of these voter guides, academic institutions that closely follow this, how they are looking at the election, how they are presenting it, taking everything you see on X or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok at face value and only reacting, I think, is partly what has led to such polarization in our politics. And having that curious mind that wants to go deeper, that wants to look at multiple sources, I think is really the best way to stay vigilant about the information that's going to be out there.
Brian, on that note, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate the time and insights.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Folks, I've been speaking with Brian DeAngelis, partner and head of the Washington office at stakeholder solutions firm Penta Group. And this has been Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on the BFM app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just look for Enterprise Explores. Looking ahead, we've got the Breakfast Club replay happening after the 1 p.m. news bulletin. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Keep it here to BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.